welcome to the Common Geeking Program,
a
book club podcast where each week three of us read up on a topic, then discuss it from geeky, nerdy perspectives. This week, I am your host, Laura Kramer, and we'll be discussing, my brain is off, and so I literally almost just read topic and theme, and then just kept going.
See, the funny thing is most people read that as a joke, but you would have done it for real.
Nope. Would have been dead serious. And we will be discussing the topic of Westworld Season 2, and we'll be looking at sound design and how it affects the experience of watching and or playing something.
It's everybody's favorite thing to discuss on a Westworld podcast, is the sounds.
Oh, definitely.
There are so many sounds.
It's the most interesting part, really. You know. Mm-hmm.
Screw all those review and all those summary podcasts. We need a Westworld soundcast.
I would listen to the fuck out of that.
Listen to the fuck out of that.
No dialogue, though. Just
no
I mean, like, just sounds. Just, you know. And here we have the man in black's footsteps. Listen closely.
They're shuffly here because he just got shot for the 17th time this episode.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
We could probably do a re-edit of the show where we cut out all the dialogue so we just have Bernard staring blankly into the camera. And then we have Charlotte staring blankly into the camera, and it, like, we make the episode take just as long, but nobody's talking.
And we can call each episode, like, Blank is a Creep. Like, it would be Bernard is a Creep, and just have him staring at people, and show everyone's, like, reactions, and get edited in fun reactions.
So, this is the last episode of the Comic Geeking program, because all our resources are going into this now.
Great.
Okay. And to bring it back to the introduction to this particular last episode of the Comic Geeking program, I am joined by two people, each of whom have selected a domain that they think connects to our topic and theme, and they are...
My name is Colin Ketchin, and I'm not the representative this podcast deserves, but I'm the representative it needs right now.
I'm representing The Dark Knight.
Keenan, how do you feel about that? The fact that that's the one that we deserve, and apparently you don't exist?
I feel like Harvey Dent would have been cooler, but, you know, I mean, he died when the Batman killed him.
I killed those people.
You know. Hi, it's me, Keenan Kodish. I will be representing Lord of the Rings. I'm gonna restrict it to, like, I don't know, because it's hard to, I didn't want to say, like, just one
Wait,
movie.
The films or the books?
The films.
Because yeah, the that sound, book sound design, so good.
Oh my god.
The ASMR of the pages.
Yeah, I was about to say, the pages are perfectly just crispy. Yeah, I'm just gonna, the original, I don't want to say the original trilogy, but I suppose, like, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, mainly. I was gonna only pick, like, the Fellowship, but then I did, like, more research, and because I already kind of knew this, but I realized that a lot of it was made as, because they kind of filmed all of them at once, so they kind of made the music all at once, and in different, like, sections kind of a thing, so I'm just going
to
kind of...
Well, while we're still in the intro, I do want to welcome a new podcast member, Keenan's Face, which I've never seen in a podcast recording before. Keenan, how's the new internet?
It's definitely an internet. I don't have to manually reset it every hour and 50 minutes. That's always
that's exciting.
Fun. And by reset, I mean, like, turn off the modem and turn it back on, you know, because I had to do
Holy shit.
Sounds miserable.
That's such a pain.
Yeah, we kept calling them, and, like, my father was getting really angry because he was like, why do I have to keep resetting my internet? I'm paying you guys $90 a month. And they were like, you have the best modem. And we were like, that's not what we were saying.
Also, my apologies to the editor for eating right now.
Yeah,
it's Pat. It's Jeff. Jeff. Yeah.
God, that's gross.
Also, I haven't eaten dinner yet, so I might just, like, reach through my computer and punch you in the face for eating because I am hungry and tired.
Oh no, it's fine because I had the chili, but I also have lemon chicken that I made. If you want some,
yeah, I want that. Thanks. All right. Anyway, we're still in this fucking introduction because that's how today's going. But we are going to start by summarizing our topic and domains before we openly discuss. And then we will close with a competitive rating section to determine who best contributed and whether or not today's topic is enjoyable. Very nice.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was burping at the cat. You can edit that out, right, Jeff?
I mean, it was kind of beautiful, though.
Keenan, you look deeply uncomfortable. Are you okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm fine.
You look... I've never been able to tell if you're uncomfortable during a recording, but now I know. This has been hell for you. I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. It's just, you know, I just like moved in 4 days ago. I just got a bed and I'm pretty excited about it.
Oh, got a bed. I thought you said got out of bed and I was like, what the fuck?
No, so we just have no furniture, so it's hard to situate yourself anyplace.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, I just bought a beanbag chair from Yogibo for more money than I probably should have spent on it, and it's real comfy.
But they're really nice.
It's really nice, and it's not as much as Lovesack, so like...
Yeah, that's true.
Wait, did you say Lovesack?
Yeah, Lovesack. Do you know what that is?
That sounds like something.
It's a, like a beanbag and... fucking couch store where their cheapest beanbag for children is $350.
Well, they sell it to children. You better not. I mean, you shouldn't say that you sell love sex to children. I'm no beanbag expert, but I'm just saying.
I'm no beanbag expert.
Oh no.
I'm just saying, like, that's poor naming. Someone said it and they were like, oh, nice. And I bet someone else definitely in the room, but like on a lower like pay grade was like, oh, that's a bad idea, but I can't say anything. but anyway, good for you, I guess. Man. Good. It's always good to buy. I get my love sex for free, but you know, I guess some people have to pay for it.
All right. We're going to just keep going here. So we're talking about Westworld Season 2. I know Westworld has been discussed on this podcast at least twice, I think.
Yeah, I think this is your third episode where we talk about Westworld.
It is. I think this is my second hosted episode.
No, because there was episode 33 was Danger Cats, and you repped it. And then Pat had to take off his headphones because he hadn't seen it. And then Pat repped an episode about it, and you were in it. And now we're doing this one.
And cool. Then you repped Westworld. Didn't you do Westworld?
I did.
Yeah.
Because
you're a butt.
It was the original Westworld. It was good.
Right. It did actually work out. We're talking about season two, and we're talking about sound design. Season two. Okay. So Westworld, you've heard about it on the podcast before. HBO series. There are robots. They're becoming sentient. They are mad because they get murdered and raped a lot.
Why don't they just like deal with it?
I mean, because that sucks.
Why don't they just program the robots to be able to deal with it? That sounds like a better idea.
Yeah, but just give them...
That probably would have been
give
smart.
Give them the tools they need to process trauma over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, also, Arnold's like kind of went on a whole thing and was like, no, they should become sentient because they are sentient. So here is how I'm going to like really ruin them in the future, which was like mean. And then he was like, okay, and now I'm going to make them kill me because that's not going to traumatize and fuck up somebody's consciousness when they're becoming alive.
Yeah.
Anyway, season two aired on April 22nd of 2018 and ran till the end of June. And where season one, you were kind of learning the world and getting to know some of the characters, season two happens after the cliffhanger of an episode of season one where the robots are essentially like, fuck it, we're going to take over.
And Dolores shoots Odin in the head. Anthony Hopkins, he played Odin in Thor.
I know.
That's like a thing I do on this show. Come on, keep up.
I don't have that. I just can't. I'm so sorry. Can't keep up today.
Not today.
So Dolores kills Anthony Hopkins, and it's a really big deal because he's like the owner of the company, and they're at like a huge party for all the shareholders, stakeholders, whatever. And, like, the people that enjoy and pay for the park. And they're all like, what the fuck just happened? Except we don't really get to see that because what we see next is basically a military. Well, okay. Season two starts off with a conversation between Dolores and Bernard.
Yep.
Where Bernard, it appears that Bernard is having a conversation with Dolores in her semi-awakening state.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was Bernard?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there are going to be some spoilers here for season
Major
two.
Major spoilers.
So.
Spoilers. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have to go too deep into it because, Laura, the only thing you had us watch for today was season two, episode one. And episode one doesn't actually reveal a lot of information
or
about,
anything.
Like, the world. It's basically just, like, showing the aftermath of Dolores shooting Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Spoilers for season one. however.
Oh, yeah, I guess that. Heavily but that spoilers. Aired in 2016. Well, I feel less bad about that. But the whole shtick around this episode is you see a couple different timelines, and you don't have a great sense of how they relate to each other. Where you see Dolores like exacting revenge on the people, like saying like, "Have you ever considered what you're doing to us?" Then you get Bernard dealing with Charlotte, one of the board members of the company. And then also Bernard at a different time dealing with the military who are trying to evacuate people. And the episode kind of lives in that for a bit and mostly just sets up the rest of the season.
I liked that first scene where he's talking to Dolores, though, because it kind of, I think the first words, if I'm not mistaken, are, "Is this now?"
Yeah. Which, given the time jumpiness of the show, is poignant.
I was kind of disappointed at that because, you know. It was already kind of like, it was a cool twist in the first season, but I was kind of, I don't know. I'm sure it will pan out. The series is very well written.
Yeah.
But I was a little confused for a little bit because there was a twist before, you know what I mean? You don't know if it's going to be the twist or if it's just, that's the obvious thing, you know?
Yeah.
I was watching, Bernard wakes up, and then he's, you know, with these, you know, paramilitary, private military types. I'm like, okay, well he's with the POCs, and then, like, later, you know, PMCs.
I'm actually going to cut you off. I'm really sorry. Okay, sure. Let's discuss that in the discussion part and try to get through the summary real quick here.
Sure.
But basically, it sets up where there's a lot of jumping around. You're not 100% sure what's happening. The Man in Black is back and
my boy
decides that he wants to kind of, like, live his fucking truth of wanting to kill and murder everything.
No, he doesn't want to kill and murder everything.
But in the context of what we're talking about, we're really discussing the sound design. So I wanted to talk a little bit about...
Yeah, I really want to know what about this show jumped out at you that you're like, this is it. Yeah. This is the take.
What's funny is that I never thought about sound design until I started listening to The Greatest Generation. And then they keep on... The Greatest Generation and then also Friendly Fire. And they talk about sound design a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I just like... accidentally started paying more attention to, and I feel like every time I talk about a piece of media I'm always like, yeah, but that sound design though. And also I just really love Westworld, and I really loved season 2, and I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did, so I figured we could talk about it. But I was listening to it a little bit. One thing that I really enjoyed about it is that the design of the acoustics, or the design of the acoustics, literally, please take that out, Jeff. the music, the background noises, the like the shots and the people being stabbed, like all of the different layers of sound that went into this episode really set you up to feel like you were like how I imagine you're supposed to feel. Like you're confused because the timing is weird, like there are things that are really sharp and crystal clear, and like there's no background music. Then there'll be background music that just sets this like reverberating bass, like when you're looking at the military coming through.
Something that really caught my attention about the music is that there is music under almost the entire episode. It really only drops out a couple points of calm, but usually to emphasize things. Like one I noticed is when Maeve says the line, like, "If you don't shut up, I'll cut your dick off and feed it to you." Like, the music drops out just for that line and then picks back up. But most of the music is just, like...
It's atmospheric.
It's atmospheric music. Oh. It's, like, a synthesized pad that's just playing, like, a tone or two. It follows, like, really no specific melody or motif. It's not actually, like, painting lyrics. And a thing that music does in movies as a part of the sound design is a lot of times music, like, tells you how you're supposed to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like yawning strings make you think like, hey, you need you. Hey, feel sad. Hey, audience, feel sad now.
By the way.
By the way, in case you didn't notice, your heart is supposed to break. But I feel like what this sort of atmospheric take does is a little less of nudging you in that direction. And it seems more like it's just displaying what the character at the center of the moment is feeling. So we follow Bernard for a lot of the episode. Mm. And when he's talking, it's just this, you know, this calm, static sound. And when he's confused, you get this buzzing sound on top of it. And the notes are dissonant, like because he's dealing with time slippage, as they say in the episode, which kind of, I don't know why, but my brain associates that. Like when I hear slippage in some sort of medical context, it just sounds gross. And time slippage is like some quantum version of diarrhea I don't want to experience.
I mean, I don't think he did either, so.
I don't know if he did, but I can't understand his experience. And that's the point of the show.
Didn't seem like a good experience.
It didn't seem good at all.
Whether or not it was what you think it is.
And for the circumstantial things like people getting shot in the background and stabbed, what I noticed is those sounds, like they were definitely aiming for realism. Like when someone gets shot, the sound from the gun being shot matches. Sometimes you'll see like you'll hear a gunshot, but it's like, hey, that's a shotgun sound coming from a pistol. Like that doesn't match up. Like clearly they care about making the visuals line up with the audio. But even though all of it is realistic, it's kind of subdued.
Yeah.
Like the gunshots aren't cracking through the speakers and ripping you out of it. Like when Bernard is in a haze walking across the beach. Like, you hear the gunshots in the background, but it doesn't overpower the music. Because he doesn't even flinch at it. Like, it just happens and he keeps walking.
Yeah. I was reading a little bit about it.
And I think it's interesting.
Yeah, the actual sound designer for the episode said that his goal in making this sci-fi show was to make it feel really realistic. Because in a lot of sci-fi, they want it to sound, like, futuristic or, like, new or different. Where he really wanted to feel real. And there's actually a moment where they're in the Mariposa, the inn in Sweetwater, where there's the mechanical piano is playing on its own, which it does a lot in the first season too. But in the first season, it was doing covers of like modern pop music.
Yeah, and which I thought was clever.
Here it was playing The Entertainer.
Which he said they actually fell into that because The Entertainer was one of the first songs that was ever actually played on one of those mechanical pianos. And so the intention there was to kind of slowly, or maybe not the intention, but the unintended effect was that it was almost like the robots were in control again. Like it's time for their story. And so the sound design in there was like very intentional in kind of setting up the same reflection of the world around them.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll talk more about all this stuff because it's awesome and cool. But first, I want to have you guys talk about your domains, where your representatives get to summarize what they have brought to the table.
So, I brought The Dark Knight, and I want to apologize to our listeners because I had the opportunity to prepare a lot more lines from The Dark Knight and say them to you in the gruff Batman voice, but I didn't do that prep work. So you might, I had the thing I said at the beginning, but I'm afraid I'm lacking. And I just watched The Dark Knight 2 weeks ago, so this should be on the tip of my tongue. But I brought The Dark Knight because when Laura said we want to do sound design in Westworld, I said, what the fuck? What are you doing? How am I going to do anything with this? Like, every TV show has sound design, you know, sound design just literally being like everything audible that you hear and the people who mix and master that stuff and present it to you, from the music to the sound effects to the dialogue to everything. Like, it's so universal that it's almost pointless. But then when I started watching the episode today and I just put headphones in and mostly listened to it while I did housework, and I kept thinking, like, okay, what can I latch on to? All right, we got the atmospheric music. We got the atmospheric. Oh, this is really atmospheric. Kind of reminds me of The Dark Knight. Bam! There it is. Fucking got it. Sweet. So that's my toehold.
Go with your gut.
Now, the reason that I think that these two things are pretty similar, the first thing I want to point out is the soundtrack. As I mentioned only moments ago, my friends, the soundtrack in Westworld is atmospheric. And what that really means is it's not really at the forefront of what's happening. It's not bombastic and vying for your attention. It's there to sort of underscore what's happening and set the tone. And it does that, like I said, I think by staying simple. Like it's only one or two or three different things happening at the same time. And there aren't melodies. There aren't like sequences of notes that repeat that you're supposed to pay attention to. It's all meant to just feel like a reflection of what the character is experiencing.
What's funny about the atmospheric music in the Westworld is that I wanted to hear it sped up because I felt like there was something that had just been elongated and stretched out like in Inception.
So, yeah. And that's a good... I did want to bring up some of the other Christopher Nolan films as well because they're all scored by Hans Zimmer. So I might talk about Dunkirk a little bit too. But the main thing that was done in The Dark Knight that really... And Hans Zimmer is a trendsetter in Hollywood scoring, because that's what everyone wants to be, apparently. What he did with the theme of The Joker, for example. The Joker's theme in the Dark Knight film is not a melody. It is just, like, it is literally a razor blade being drawn up a stringed instrument. So it's like this, meh, but then like, meh, and it like goes up and up and up, but very slowly. Jeff, if you could put in the real sound and not just loop me doing that over and over again, I'd appreciate it.
You should just loop Colin doing that over and over again.
Jeff, I'll stop. I stopped eating. I'm not chewing into the mic anymore. Come on, help me out here, bud.
But he did it.
Sound design for the episode. That'd be great.
So the music in particular grabbed me because specifically what Hans Zimmer had mentioned is that he was like, I didn't want to worry about melodies. I just wanted to worry about how you feel. So it's about like drum beats and it's about these single notes and these single strings of things that push things along. And that is where I think these two overlap considerably, because in The Dark Knight, there's like one musical motif that everybody knows, and I'm not going to mimic it because I don't want to give Jeff more ammunition. But that is a very deliberate choice. To say, I'm not going to write a tune and instead say, I'm just going to make sounds that reflect what I'm feeling. Because when you have notes that don't line up, that's dissonance and it makes you feel anxious. So both movies use that to heighten tension. They use volume to heighten tension. They also both do this thing where the complexity of the music, so like the number of things happening at once, the number of instruments playing and notes playing, that complexity in the music also reflects the complexity of what's happening in the dialogue. Like, I noticed, because Westworld is a very heady show, whenever they hit a piece of dialogue that is, like, poignant or philosophical, it'll usually hang on that, and the music hangs on that as well, and, like, adds some strings in to punctuate it. The difference with music being Batman is an action film, so it has, like, some score just for action sequences. The one thing I want to point out and highlight as a difference, and this just might be a, this is a style thing with Christopher Nolan, is that whereas the atmospheric sounds in both of these are realistic, like the Foley work is all very real sounding, in Westworld, as I said, it's sort of subdued. The volume of these things is turned down, so it's not interrupting your attention. But Christopher Nolan does the opposite, and he cranks that shit up. If you hear a gunshot in a Christopher Nolan film, like that cracks. That hits you. And they do that on purpose to heighten the impact of that sort of thing. The first few minutes of the film Dunkirk were like very startling and sort of tough to watch in IMAX because it was so fucking loud. So I think it's interesting that from a music standpoint, they're very similar. From like an aesthetic standpoint, they're very similar. But in that way of engaging the audience, I think it's because Westworld is so thematic and broad in its writing. Like it's not very plot heavy this season. It's more about broad themes. Whereas Batman, it is intelligent, but it's still an action film. So I think it's just two different ways of treating the tension appropriate to their particular stories. Cool. I need a Batman thing. What is that? Where is he? All right, cool. I got it. That's something.
I have no idea what just happened.
I didn't prep enough Batman stuff.
Oh. He was quoting Batman.
Sure. Me. Well, Colin, thank you so much for bringing The Dark Knight to us in so many ways. And now, Keenan, let's talk a little bit about Lord of the Rings.
Actually, I changed my topic just now to the Common Geeky Program podcast.
Oh, shit.
I think I'll start so with meta. Episode one.
So we started by sounding like shit, and now we sound less like shit.
Yeah, more like, you know, like piss. Sure. It's you know, it's an upgrade, but still, you know.
Easier to clean up.
Yeah.
True.
Anyway, so if you don't know, quick overview of the film series. Lord of the Rings is based off the book The Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien.
What?
Damn it, I was going to act surprised.
It's set in the fictional world of Middle-earth. You know, it's a classic, it's the classic, I would argue, high fantasy epic of the modern age. It's a lot of things sound cliche from it because it is what originated the cliches.
Indeed.
The films follow the Hobbit, which is like a smaller person, basically.
I thought you were going to say the book, and I'm like, whoa, what are you doing?
You're going rogue!
Follow the Hobbit, Frodo Baggins, as he and the Fellowship, which is his agreed-upon party with various people of, you know, elves, humans, and men, and hobbits, embark on a quest to destroy the One Ring, a source of massive power made by the Dark Lord Sauron. And by destroying the ring, they'll destroy the evil Sauron, who, you know, And that will eventually save the world from the forces of darkness. Eventually they get split up, there's, you know, twists, turns, everyone eventually has to go on their own little way, there's death, there's revival, there's more deaths, and there's sadness, there's joy, there's everything in it. In my opinion, it was one of the most ambitious film projects of all time, I would argue.
And boy, did it pay off.
Oh my god, it paid off.
I love those movies.
Yeah, but for the sake of this, we'll be focusing on the music of the series, which was actually composed, orchestrated, conducted, and produced all by a man named Howard Shore.
Howard Shore.
Yeah, it's nice. His most successful work, one would say. And some would say one of the greatest achievements in recent cinema history, as well as all film music history.
Mm.
It's received, I think, like 3 Oscars.
The Return of the King received 11.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that for the music.
I think he's talking about music, yeah.
Oh, for music, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's received like 3 Oscars, some Golden Globes, and like, you know, a Grammy, I think, at some point. I don't know. It's just received so much. Oh, yeah, okay, it's 3 Oscars, 2 Golden Globes, 2 Grammys, and like nominations galore. It also broke records as having the highest number of, Colin, correct me, leitmotifs? Yeah, sure. Which is like these little tiny themes that are played to go along with people, places, objects.
Yeah.
Yeah, Colin was really busy singing over what you were saying, so he couldn't actually help you.
Oh, yeah.
So sorry.
Yeah, and it's because he wrote over 100.
Yeah.
You know, just for these movies. And that's just these tiny little things, as well as the inclusives of diegetic.
Oh, diegetic. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's songs that the characters can hear. So, like, yes. When you see a character sing a song, like, for example, Mary and Pippin sing a few songs.
Oh, Missy.
And the characters can hear it. That's an example of this diegetic, you know.
Yep.
Songs, which Tolkien in the books wrote a lot of.
Yes.
There are so many songs.
He wrote a lot, and they adapted a lot of them. My father still, it's not Lord of the Rings, but he got just as emotional about that, but in particular, the Hobbit one for the Misty Mountains. He like, he like teared up, you know, my 6'3" ex-biker father.
Oh, yeah. No, they did a very good job with that. I am curious, though, just because this is such a different kind of score.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to Westworld, what makes you bring that to the table?
One, just because, just get out of the way, like, of course, it's one of the most recognized, and like I said, it's very award-winning, and I don't want to say influential, but very well-known. Scores that people, you know. And also because it kind of has an opposition to both your guys's. It's a third type of the three, you know, types of scores we kind of talked about. You know, well, Westworld is more atmospheric and kind of, you know, I would say more subtle for the most part, especially in season 2. Mm.
Subtle.
Yeah. And then The Dark Knight, it's very there. It's, you know, it's very much to encourage, you know, these emotions.
Mm.
But the Lord of the Rings, while it encourages emotions and oftentimes is subtle.
That entrance to Rohan is not subtle at all.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not subtle. Yeah, like I said, sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's not. But it's just, it's so, because each of your things are more tied to emotions and other ones tied to, like, character themes. This one's very tied to, like, material.
Mm. Yeah, I guess, Yeah, different items and places have
each
themes.
Each location, item, person has like their own little thing. Even like very minor things, like the Shire, like some of the Shire people who you see for 5 seconds are like, boo-doo-boo-doo. It's like, oh, that's, Froggy Big Pockets. We all know him.
Yeah, my favorite part is when Fatty Bulger walks in and they all go, Norm!
Yeah, so like it's just because it's so... gonna make fun of me. Specific.
Hey, you did such a good job.
Oh my god, Keaton!
Wait,
you did it!
Yeah, I know. Very proud. It took 23 years. I'll mess it up later.
I'm so proud of you!
Don't. Like I said, I'm just gonna let you down.
Was it just the bad internet the whole time?
You're unsure. Yeah, it is. I've been saying it 100% all my life.
It was trying to buffer and it just skipped the whole time.
Yep. It just kept skipping out. Suspific.
Yeah, so because it's so specific and so targeted towards each individual object and location, it's, like I said, Yours are very more grandiose and broad. This is very exact. And while the songs and score can sometimes be very grand and bombastic, it has a certain, I don't want to say personal, but it feels very individualized as opposed to your guys's, which is why I brought it to the table.
Very nice. Awesome. Thank you, Keenan.
Guys.
What?
I just opened my phone to go on Safari, and I clicked on the address bar.
If you say, I don't want to hear about your porn, I really don't.
No, here's the thing. I clicked on the address bar, and I sat here for a second because I forgot I was going to type. And the automatic suggestion in my keyboard right now, take a guess. Take any guess as to what the automatic suggestion in my keyboard is right now, because I guarantee you, you're going to be a million miles off. I just want to, I want some
I don't know, dad sound ASMR.
Wait, is it going to be children's love sex?
Rice terraces of the Philippine Cordilleras.
Oh, of course. I forgot about your fondness for rice
what
patties.
What the fuck is this? What the hell is this?
I don't know
what's happening. Okay, I'm gonna go to the Wikipedia. All what right. is this? The rice terraces.
No, wait,
terraces
why? Can we move on yet?
We're trying.
I'm sorry. I'm so distracted. I'll come back to this.
All right.
We're trying to work here.
As Keenan lies down on his side and gets real comfy.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I don't have chairs like you rich folk.
All right. So
I'm sitting on the floor.
With our topic and two domains summarized, we're going to move on to the discussion, which I imagine is going to get a little out of hand, but let's try it anyway.
It's definitely going
to
get out of hand.
I actually wanted to start by continuing with Keenan's last, but what? I can't. There's something floating near your face. You,
who,
Colin,
what,
yeah,
me, him, what?
I think it's his mic. It's just, oh, it's his phone. It's just dark.
Oh, it's your phone. Okay.
It just blends in.
It's very confusing. Sorry. I thought maybe you were being haunted by ghosts or something.
That'd be annoying.
I wanted to follow up and keep talking about the difference between kind of the thematic music from Lord of the Rings versus the more
tonal
atmospheric music from Dark Knight and Westworld. So I'll kind of kick it off with, which one do you prefer? Like, is there a style that you like more in your media?
And it kind of depends on what kind of movie I'm watching. You know, if it's like there's this one that actually I thought about repping before Colin said he would do The Dark Knight. Is actually The Dark Knight Returns, Part 1, which is this animated movie based on the comic. And it's really good. And there's this one musical score. Mm-hmm. I can never remember the name of it. That's like plays when Batman like comes back. And it's first heard when hears when he decides to come back. And it's this emotional, like very somber though. I'm coming back. And it's bombastic and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And there are other times where things are like a lot more, you know, subtle that I really like in the Bioshock Infinite, Bioshock series, well, the Family 1 and 2, there is a The Ocean on His Shoulders is what it's called, and it's kind of like the Bioshock theme, and it like kind of has this, it represents like the overarching, you know, story of Rapture, the city within the series, in which that it starts off with a kind of squiggly violin sound, and then it has this beautiful little violin moment. It's kind of like the idea of what Rapture could have been. But then it kind of like, I don't know, it takes a sort of more, I don't know how, but it kind of goes lower, I guess, and it makes a more somber note. And then it gets all messed up again, because that's what happened with Rapture. It came out of chaos,
really cool.
Was good, and then was bad again. But then there are other times where I like more, you know, quieter and subtle moments, like in the first season of Westworld, where it was more, sometimes I think silence can go really far.
And I think silence is a choice when you're in sound design. Like, it is definitely, when I was watching this episode again, the first episode of season 2 for the podcast, I noticed really distinctively when the music stopped and when there wasn't that background atmosphere. And like,
and there was almost like no space in the episode without music.
Yeah.
It was like 3 or 4 instances. It was very, very
low. Yeah. So, like I said, to answer your question, it depends on what I'm hearing. Yeah. If it's like, you know, like The Dark Knight, I like to hear like things pumping me up. You know, I like the bada, 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 blah, you know. And then other times, I like the silence of like Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, that's
the first Blade Runner. I was torn between, like I said, I was torn between Blade Runner and like, you know, but like Blade Runner, where it's just, there's some scenes where there's just no, barely any sound, and that's all you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think that allows the story of the actors to like really have their moment, and that rests on their strengths, you know?
And if we're talking about like just soundtrack. Like, that's always a very, that's also a very deliberate choice to, you have to decide when crafting a soundtrack and scoring a film, how do you want it to affect the audience? And for a film like The Dark Knight, like, it is clearly to supplement what is happening. Hmm. Because there are some movies, like, if you say, hey, you just saw Lord of the Rings, what's your favorite thing? And they'll go, maybe it's the da 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 da.
Yeah,
you know what that is. I defy anybody walking out of The Dark Knight to be like, hey, what's your favorite song? And then you'll just get a recording of me going, so that doesn't really work out very well.
Yeah.
But even Westworld, for its atmospheric bits, it does have a couple recurring motifs that come up, and it's like those synth pads and those very gentle things that sort of fill the space, especially because it's a TV show and not a film, right? Like the other ones we're talking about, it has the space to relax and settle into these character moments for much longer periods of time. But those will space out between, like, the main motif is the boo-doo-doo-doo-dum, boo-doo-doo-doo-dum, boo-doo-doo-doo-dum. Like, that's a big thing, which is just ascending some of the main notes from the harmonic minor scale.
I was wondering if the weird dissonance was related to that. It sounded very similar to me when I was paying attention to it.
Yeah, Keenan, I got a thing. I'll zip through this quick because it's music theory, and we're not going to dwell on this.
That's fine.
Most of the music in Westworld is the harmonic minor scale. Mm-hmm. So natural minor and harmonic minor, the difference is one note. The last note in the scale of harmonic minor is raised. And the purpose of that is so that the five chord, which is the antithesis to the root chord, the one, can give you a lot of tension. But ironically, even though it's in that key that is designed to make the five feel more impactful, it doesn't use the five chord very much. So it sounds like a very different thing. It actually rarely settles on that, and it just moves all over the place and all these things that never resolve and never actually like fit the typical use of the harmonic minor scale. So it kind of breaks its own rule in that regard. And that's why, even though it's a very normal thing, they use it in ways that doesn't sound normal, because they break like the purpose of that scale.
I just want to say, Colin, you said something that I actually disagree with.
Ooh.
You said,
no.
Yeah, right.
On a podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How dare you?
Yeah, right. I'm going to make a robot game consciousness and shoot you. That's right.
I'm going to tell the police you've got a child's love sack.
Oh, no. I swear I bought it online.
that doesn't help. No. It doesn't help
at all.
I just proved to you that city is full of people who are ready to believe in good.
You said, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you said that because it's a TV show, it has more time to do things. Is that what you said?
It does.
That is
what I said.
I respectfully disagree. I think as a TV show, because if you sit down for the movie, that is the experience, right? It's very contained. So they do, I think they're more allowed than TV shows, which have to, in a lot of ways, encourage you to watch the next episode. And a good way to do that, is to make it quick. And make it fast, and make things happen, and make you go, oh wow, all that stuff happened. I don't know where to be with this. I need time to process this, and then I need to come back to that.
So let me clarify what I said a little bit. I wasn't saying that broadly every TV show takes more time with characters than movies do, but it is an opportunity that they have, and it is an opportunity that Westworld specifically takes advantage of. Because even just looking at a clock, whether you watch the show or not, there is more screen time of Bernard in Westworld than there is of Frodo in The Lord of the Rings than there is of Batman in all three of the Dark Knight.
No, trilogy. You're right, because it's a longer story, because you can tell it over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
However, per episode, I want to say that, in my opinion, Westworld is not, it's weird. It's, I don't want to say it's a slow show, but they do take their time with it. And I think the music definitely adds that, because there are some scenes that really,
I don't want to say it's slow, but it's not fast.
No, not, I don't, like I said, I don't want to say, because slow implies a certain sluggish feeling, and I don't want to say that, but I want to say it's like a steady, it's not like fast paced.
It doesn't rush.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's what they do, I think it's very impressive, because they take, like, I'm pretty sure you could probably do a super cut of Westworld and cut out a lot. I don't want to say unnecessary, because they're not unnecessary, but what's the term? Like, at the edge, precipice.
Precipice.
Precipice. You know, like the scenes, like the piano playing by itself.
Peripheral.
Yeah, peripheral scenes. Like,
oh, I was way off.
Where you have the piano playing and you see a bunch of, you know, like dead bodies and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
We already kind of knew that shit was going down and we knew all this stuff. And yeah. It didn't, I don't want to say it didn't add anything because it did, but like it adds stuff in a different way. Meanwhile, movies for like in The Dark Knight, every scene kind of is like a thing to lead to the next one. Right? It's all, you know.
Yeah, dude, like even just watching that movie again, and I've seen it like more than 10 times at this point, The Dark Knight is a fucking nonstop movie.
Oh my
like,
God, every
scene. Never slows down.
Yeah.
It's so tense and it has so much momentum.
Exactly.
And I mean, it would be impossible to match that in a TV show. And maybe there's, it could, like these movies could have been stretched out to include more character moments, but they're so well made that I don't think anybody's itching for that with this thing.
I think in like The Dark Knight, the characters are kind of put in place to feed the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the music kind of does that too. It's more about the story. Meanwhile, Lord of the Rings, the music is kind of put into the characters, who once again, the characters kind of support the story. They also have similar themes of like good and evil, you know, and stuff. However, Westworld, I feel, and I don't know exactly how to say this, but like the characters are not there to feed the story, but the story is kind of there to like propel the characters onto the stage, if that makes sense. Because I feel like it's not necessarily this overarching story with all these characters doing stuff. I feel like it's these characters and we're focusing on them rather than like what exactly is going on in the big world, you know?
Right, right.
Because a lot of it, and I think Westworld, maybe this is more Westworld season one than season two, but a lot of Westworld, in my opinion, is about, not necessarily about like, yeah, sure, the man in black is doing something. And yeah, sure, everyone else is just kind of trying to find something, or like, there's political intrigue behind the park and its management, yada, yada, yada. Ford's on his way out, blah, 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 blah. What we're really interested in is, hey, how are you feeling today, Dolores?
Yeah.
You know, and like, I feel like that the music does that more, because it's not bombastic, it's more like, I don't know, intimate in a way. To the point of,
yeah, it is.
I frankly didn't even notice, I know this sounds bad, but like, I didn't notice, it was there, the music was always there, but actually I thought some stuff didn't have scoring, because I was so pulled in to the characters, I was so focused. I mean, that's a product of the cinematography. Meanwhile, like in The Dark Knight and stuff.
I think it is, yeah, it's a lot of different things. It's a lot of different things coming together. And I like your point about The Lord of the Rings, because by having a thematic score like that, what you do is you invoke a sort of recall in the audience, where it's like, in the movies start by playing these sweet themes of the Shire. And then when they're in the middle of Mordor, and then they play that little theme that brings your mind back to that. So it contextualizes the show to the audience. And that's something that The Dark Knight doesn't really do, and that Westworld doesn't really do. And it's kind of an opportunity, like, and I don't know, I don't think it's a right or wrong thing. I think it works for Lord of the Rings because of how grand it is, how easy it is to get swept away. It's nice to have that touchstone. But when you're talking about how, and another one of your points I liked, how Westworld does take their time and they need to keep you invested, the dialogue in the show is so pedantic and philosophical and like big that like it's not that whip smart Aaron Sorkin stuff that keeps you like, oh no, he didn't, oh yes he did.
Whoa.
Like, you like Bernard never says anything where you go, oh snap, queen, like that doesn't happen.
Slay queen Bernard. I love
it. Nor should it.
Snap queen Bernard. But like, it's but I think just that subtle propulsion of the subtle score. I don't think a thematic score like Lord of the Rings would work in a slow process like Westworld, or in a momentum based affair like The Dark Knight. Like in The Dark Knight, if in the middle of the Harvey Dent thing, you hear a theme recalling when Batman was talking to Alfred at the beginning of the film, it's gonna rip you out of what's going on.
Yeah,
and I think it only works because of the scales of these different things.
Yeah, I agree. Because when you come right down to it, Westworld is about, you know, this relatively small group of people. Meanwhile, you know, The Dark Knight is about this whole city of, you know, people and the greater repercussions for the outside world.
Of people ready to believe in good.
You know, and what it means to be, you know, the hero and stuff. Meanwhile, and also on the same level, you've Lord of the Rings, which is about the fate of the entire world and all that is good rests upon us. And I agree with you, the score, by making it like, but I'd like to take a second, and I like, you know, I like what you said, Colin, about, you know, how it wouldn't necessarily work. But I kind of like, the one thing of Lord of the Rings that I also really liked about the thematic score of Lord of the Rings was the diegetic, we said, right? The diegetic music, I think, offers, and I think also the sum of the diegetic music that is in Westworld, but not to the same extent. In the diegetic music of like the characters singing, it always kind of fits the moment, and I think that offers a certain level of, I don't want to say inclusion, but a certain level of relation with the audience, because the audience is watching, and we know this whole overarching stuff, is that it lets the audience kind of feel as if the characters also understand what's going on. When Pippin sings the sad song, and Faramir's going, you know, die trying to retake the River City of
Osgiliath,
I was about to say. It makes us feel closer to him, because we understand, because we also understand, and that's because we objectively know everything about the story, and we makes us feel closer.
Yeah, I mean, Lord of the Rings has a different mission, because, I mean, The Dark Knight is set in Gotham, which in The Dark Knight is just Chicago.
Or New York.
So it's a familiar, it's New York in the third movie. Unabashedly, they just changed the city, but they don't need to draw you in to the world of Batman. Batman lives in more or less our world, and Westworld is a form of sci-fi that isn't terribly removed from us. Like, the philosophical stuff is beyond anything we can do right now, but the idea of androids and the idea of like fancy jeeps and things like that, those are not alien to us. Whereas the world of the Lord of the Rings is. So the task of the sound, of not just the soundtrack, but also the world sound design in Lord of the Rings is to help transport you to this other place you're not familiar with. The other topics don't have anything to do with that.
I actually disagree with you a little bit. I think Lord of the Rings is closer to Westworld than it is to The Dark Knight. And that is because if you consider, this is a little bit because,
I mean, Westworld is definitely more fantasy than The Dark Knight.
No, what I mean is like in terms of like, I don't want to say like, and thematically, actually, I would say.
Okay, yeah.
Because J.R.R. Tolkien wrote the series. And it, you know, eventually came into, you know, this relates back to the music because of the, you know, the very source of the material, was a World War One veteran that, fun fact, was actually at a really bad spot for World War One, which is saying something, because all of World War One was kind of bad.
Yeah, I've been playing Battlefield One on hard, so, like, believe me, I understand.
Yeah, so I knew what I'm talking about.
I know.
But what I'm saying is that J.R.R. Tolkien, you know, saw some terrible stuff, and I think part of, you know, the Lord of the Rings series was the sort of catharsis process for him to say, you know, I was in this hole that was muck and disgusting, but these hobbits looked really nice and there was a good life. And if you look at the movies, it's like getting back to that. That all this bad stuff happened, and then, like, the world, you know, seems like it can never come back from this moment, but it does, and good follows. And it's kind of asking, like, how do we do that? And I think Westworld kind of acts of the characters, what do you do now? And I feel like that's also a question that's posed to a lot of characters and to the audience in Lord of the Rings. And the music helps us do that. It's what makes us, because when we're watching, you know, there's like, we're bottom of the ninth, you know, Frodo's been taken, you know, there's 10,000 orcs.
It's the bottom of the ninth, Frodo.
Frodo plays baseball?
We need to get out of Cirith Ungol.
10,000 orcs between, you know, Frodo, Sam, and, you know, the Mount Doom, the eyes watching, and we're sitting there, and then, you know, Aragorn and our entire posse basically rolls up, you know.
Aragorn,
you know, rolls up on fucking, you know, the Black Gates, and then we hear that music, you know, and we have this moment of hope, of this, you know, this trust and goodness, especially because there's a moment where, you know, Sauron tries to tempt, you know, Aragorn, and we just feel, you know, so much, because that music just brings us back to that moment, you know.
Yeah, well, that's more of like the recall thing I was mentioning before, but I don't know, I kind of want to talk about like not soundtrack as well. I don't know, like, when I was listening to this episode, something, now that we're talking about it, something that caught my attention is in Westworld, I took note of all the sounds that stood out to me, but I also took note of all the times I noticed the music stop. Mm. And one of them, there wasn't really any dialogue. It was just like the squawking of birds and like the sound of like cicadas and insects just like chirping and buzzing and stuff like that.
Classic.
And, you know, just those like general atmospheric Foley stuff, like just environmental sounds. For the genre of Lord of the Rings, I'm surprised that there's not a little more of that.
Yeah.
I can't actually recall many moments in the film when you have that quiet and you just hear the world around you. Because usually there's so much action or so much music happening.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of those quiet moments. And in The Dark Knight, there aren't a lot of bustly moments. Everything is so laser focused that there isn't really room for that.
Right.
But like, that's another level of things that people tend to ignore ignore is how much thought goes into that. That sound was probably not there when they recorded the episode. Someone had to figure out to layer it in and figuring out what sounded good. And I'm just like, why does it not feel out of place that the Lord of the Rings doesn't have that and that the Dark Knight doesn't need that?
I think it's
because Westworld would sound weird without it.
Yeah.
I think it's because the Dark Knight and Lord of the Rings largely deal with these more grandiose themes, like good versus evil and stuff. Meanwhile, Westworld, while does have these larger philosophical questions, a lot of them, I feel, come right down to very relatable questions. Like, at the end of the episode, when Teddy's like, well, what do we do now? If this is true, if everything we've, you know, known is a lie, how do we go forward from here? And I think the question of, like, what do we do now when a paradigm shift comes to people is very relatable, you know? And like I said, I think it's because that's what I think allows the music to be more subtle. Because it's not these, because it's very, like I said, it makes a more intimate kind of, you know, moment.
And I think actually it might also have something to do with the difference between movies and television, where I think Colin is right, where we have more time over the series to listen to the world, where the movies have to be laser focused. And they have to be one thing happening after the other. And so they don't have time to literally stop and listen to the birds. But in Westworld, I think it's they have the space to do that. But also, I think it really helps bring you back to a moment of like everything is crazy right now. Like they're living robots that are sentient. They've just uprisen. Everyone is dead. We don't know what time it is. We're not sure what's happening. But like the world is still there.
Everyone's got like a gross amount of time slippage.
Sorry.
And nobody has anything to
clean
it up.
But the world is still there and the world is still moving. And it has bits that we can focus on and relate to and live in and say like, okay, like I know what this is. I know what's happening right now. Like we're in a field and there's some cicadas and it's probably hot there.
Yeah,
that's probably.
I don't know. It's just a little contrast, and I know we have to move on, but like a little contrast with Lord of the Rings, and like why doesn't Lord of the Rings have that kind of thing? Is that the Hobbit movies do, and the Hobbit movies? I think we've touched on it briefly at some point. Like a lot of us would consider them inferior films to the Lord of the Rings films. I still enjoy them.
Yeah,
but
like it's whatever.
But there are a couple instances, like when Bilbo is sitting in Bag End, like you hear some of those sounds of the world around him before and after the dwarves come. And then there's the moment in The Desolation of Smaug from the middle of the Hobbit book.
Smaug.
Desolation of
what? Yeah, Desolation of Smaug. You heard me, bitch.
You're garbage that kills for money.
So there's a moment where are we going? And Bilbo climbs up on top of a tree and he like bursts out of the tree and there's fresh air and there's butterflies and it's beautiful. And it's this nice, like you just hear a,
oh, that was desolation. Yeah. Exhalation.
Yeah.
Sorry. I whenever I think desolation, Smaug, I always want to say that there's more, you know, desolation and or Smaug, you know, but that's just me. Sorry, quick side on that. That annoyed the shit out of me. The entire movie's title was all about the cool dragon, and we see like maybe 20 minutes of him, and only had like the next.
No, it's not about Smaug. It's the desolation of Smaug. In the desolation
he's
of Smaug.
He's not desolated, though.
Is...
And we see one broken city. One broken city.
All right.
In the book and in the movie, Balin comes up to Dale and says, the desolation
let's
of Smaug.
Move on. We're not talking about the desolation
fine.
Of Smaug.
Anyway, moving on.
Do we have any listener questions today?
Yes. Greg Mayo has a question.
Mr. Mayo?
Oh. Greg Mayo. I met him for like 5 seconds before I left Cross Gates.
Oh, nice. He's good people.
Cool. Do you want to send it to me so I can read it? Or are you going to read it?
I didn't know if you want to pull it up. I know what it is.
Oh, wow. Fucking taking duties away from the house. Wow, okay.
Well, I mean, like, I thought you pulled up the document. If not, I don't have it pulled up.
Fucking
I could just
power
say
mad. You're trying to feel what? Like, oh, you want to fucking attach GPSs to our...
You'll be in a padded cell forever.
Wait, do you have a separate document for listener questions? Okay, I see it. My computer has stopped scrolling.
It's at the very top.
Okay, I know. I scrolled down and then I made a mistake because I saw it and then it was...
It's at the top.
Okay, so Mr. Gregory Mayo has sent us a question here. And
I don't know if Keaton is going to be able to answer this one.
The question is the Man in Black a host? And the answer is watch the season.
The answer is, Keaton, you want to take out your headphones for a bit?
I do not care. I honestly don't.
Okay.
I'm
pretty
care.
Sure that they
no,
can...
I'm sorry. No, I'm just nothing.
If he doesn't care, he doesn't care. It's whatever.
Don't feel the way that you feel, Keenan. You have to feel a different way from how you currently feel. Very important.
Listen, if you don't know how to feel...
Therapist Laura Kramer, expert in psychology.
Keenan, if you don't know how you're supposed to feel about Westworld, I could play some music for you that'll really help you figure it out.
Yeah.
So the end of Westworld season two, spoiler alert, shows the man in black in the same cage that the Elder Delos was
also
in. And the implication,
who the fuck is that?
The implication being that both the man in black and his daughter are hosts, and that he's now going through the same experience as everything else. I don't know what the timeline is on that, but they say it's been a while.
He's a daughter.
But I'm pretty sure that, like, Lisa Joy and Jonathan, I think it is Jonathan Nolan, related to Christopher Nolan. He helped write The Dark Knight, actually. Let me make sure this is the same person. But they said that I'm pretty sure he is.
Yeah, it's pretty evident at the very end that a lot of time has passed, more time than the Man in Black would actually be alive. And so at some point between the beginning of the series and the end of season two, he has become a host. Mm. But there's a lot of questions on when, how, who, what, where.
Oh, but he wasn't always a host, because that doesn't make it, that
no,
theory does not track.
No.
I was about to say, no, there are real people that we know are real that confirm that he is not, or that is dumb.
No, but Thor's little brother is a host.
True. Tom Hiddleston's in the
sorry.
Wait, Stubbs is a host?
Not Liam Hemsworth. Yeah. Is it Luke Hemsworth or Liam Hemsworth?
Liam Hemsworth. Luke. It's Liam. Liam, because Luke is the oldest one. Isn't it Luke?
I'm very confused.
Chris, not Liam. The one Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, but wait. So Stubbs. Oh, that explains why Stubbs was just jumped and we never talk about that. Okay.
Yeah,
it's Luke Hemsworth.
He brings it up at the end of the season. But yeah, a lot more people are hosts than we expected.
Also explains why he never ratted out. Okay. Of course. Yeah. Well, that's another reason not to watch it.
You're welcome.
No, that actually, SMH. I'll explain why after the podcast if you want to keep talking about it. You know.
All right. Well, anyway, that discussion actually kind of kicked off and just went for a while. So thank you guys so much for participating in it. And Greg, thank you so much for sending us a question.
Thank you, Mr.
Sorry
Mrs.
that
it
had nothing to do with sound design, but that's okay. If you have your own question or comment that you'd like to have read on the show, we make weekly posts on Facebook and Twitter where you can comment or reply, and we'll make sure we talk about it.
We really I'm considering it.
We really like doing the thing where we have listener engagement.
Yeah.
Laura likes engaging listeners so much that she's wearing a ring for more.
True.
Oh,
well,
shit.
I don't actually know who listens. That's okay.
He encourages it.
So now we are going to move on to the ratings.
Oh, I'm excited.
And we're going to begin by having each of our representatives rate the topic on a scale from 1 to 5 brain balls. So one lovely thing.
Brain balls. Nope, that's good.
I like
that's, it. I was like, wow, Laura actually fucking lost it today.
Nope.
I was actually,
nope, that's balls. A thing.
I thought you were going to go with scalps. I like it.
So in the first season, or in the second, Jesus fuck. In the first episode of the second season, we get to see for the first time the control center of the hosts in a way that we haven't seen it before, where they get to scalp somebody and then they suck with a little like fucking claw machine. They just like suck out a brain ball, and that's like, you know, the main control unit of the hosts. And that plays much later on in the series, in the season as well. So brain balls, 1 to 5. Colin.
Okay, I'm going to rate this episode of Westworld 4 out of 5 brain balls. Because season 2 of Westworld is exactly what I wanted it to be. The first season did not grab me initially because it felt very Game of Thronesy, and I don't like Game of Thrones or Game of Thronesy things because of how meandering it is and how it doesn't keep my attention through all these different characters and people. But the plot stuff, while it didn't grab me, the big thematic stuff did. I really like thematic writing, stuff that's more based on broad ideas than plot. And I think what this episode did is it raised enough questions and established enough of the philosophy that would underscore the entire season without being plotty, but also without being boring. And I think that not just the music, but just the overall attention to detail with all the visual and all audible aesthetics contributed to that. So, big fan. I like season 2 a lot better than I like season 1.
I actually do too.
Because of those changes and it being less reliant on plot. I also want to rate Rotten Tomatoes a good 0 out of 5 brain balls.
Wow.
Because during the entire discussion, I was scrolling through their fucking quotes thing for The Dark Knight, looking for things that Batman said, and good fucking Lord, man, they got nothing from Batman. They had "you'll be in a padded cell forever" like 8 times, and it's all just Joker monologues, which I get it, but come on, I'm looking for Batman.
True.
Help me out.
Mm.
Well,
left me hanging like Batman did to the Joker.
Oh,
Colin, she reps.
Nice, cool. Well, thank you, Colin, for your 4 out of 5 brain balls. Keenan, how'd you feel?
I'm not wearing hockey pads.
I would give it a solid 3 out of 5 brain balls. I believe it is very well written. It raises a bunch of really cool questions. It starts off with the themes right away. It picks up pretty well from where, because I think that's actually a real strength and or weakness of the first episode of a later season, is that it picks up really well. It does give itself a little bit more room to operate, which I would argue is actually a bit of a fault, because like I was questioning about the timeline a little too much, but the characters are well established, and like it does set up everything. And I do think it is a very it's a well-written show with a lot of really cool ideas.
Cool. All right. The next agenda point that we have is for me to award a gold star. See, I can't. It's not right. It doesn't sound right.
No, I agree. It doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I'm not going to award a gold star student. I'm going to award a gold star to one of my students. Or I'm going to...
I mean, it is correct to say a gold star student. It's better than saying I'm going to award a gold star student award.
But I'm not going to award a gold star
but
student.
But if you designate...
Award a gold star.
No, you are awarding the gold star student.
No.
With a golden star.
I mean... Ugh.
That's horrible writing.
That's why it's the gold star student award.
Yeah, you're...
It's better than repeating a word.
You're no Westworld writer.
Giving a reward to the person who I think best criteriaed in this episode. I don't know.
What were you trying to prove? That deep down, everyone's as ugly as you?
I'm going to award a gold star to the person who I thought...
You're alone!
Okay, Laura's out of the situation.
I mean, I literally am not even awake anymore. Like, it's a miracle that I am not face down in my computer. I say that every single time I... Listen, all right. Confession corner at the end.
Yeah, you are sleepy. Okay, so...
Brief confession corner at the very end. My life is relatively calm. I like to hang out on my couch. I play Breath of the Wild. I cook a lot. I go to bed. I wake up and I exercise in the morning. It's pretty straightforward. Every fucking time there's an episode of this podcast coming up, my life blows up into some insanity where I have to be like driving all over the country and I don't sleep and like my fucking car gets busted by some guy on drugs. Like, it's bizarre. Every single time there's an episode coming up, something crazy happens. And so then I sound like a fucking crazy person every time on this episode because I'm exhausted because like some fucking nuts thing happened or like my life got turned upside down. And it must sound like I'm absolutely insane, but like really I just like to hang out and eat food.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. Don't worry.
I think it does.
So which of us won?
Yeah, which one of us won? No one cares about your problems.
That's what we care about.
I mean, like, who really cares in the end? I'm kidding. All right, so I'm going to award a gold star to the person who I thought...
But wait, what is the measurement?
Yeah, what is the
getting there. Jesus Christ, guys. Fuck.
Oh, sorry.
So you're just breaking protocol? Right.
Keenan got me all excited. Keenan, you are derailing this episode and are a horrible influence on it.
That's usually how we do it. It's not my fault.
All right, I'm just doing this. We're going to award... I'm going to award somebody a golden... What kind of pistol does Dolores have?
I'm probably a peacemaker or a cult civil action army. I didn't think about it.
She has a gun.
No, it's one of those. I'm gonna go with the peacemaker because. All right.
It sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a long barrel. All
right, so we're gonna award the golden peacemaker.
My heartbeat is erratic.
And I'm actually gonna wait for the train to go by before I give my answer.
I could probably look it up for you if you really want.
That's fine.
On the website.
I'm actually gonna give this one to Keenan.
You're garbage. You kills for money.
Not only did he pronounce the word specifically correctly today for the first time.
Oh, fuck that! Fuck that!
But I really enjoyed his point about the Lord of the Rings music being thematic in terms of location and person and kind of his arguments for, you know, how that was and wasn't effective. And yeah, I think he did.
Dope. Laura's giving me a gun. Be afraid.
Yeah, fuck. I've made a terrible mistake, Colin. I'm so sorry.
Guys, I'm still scrolling through this fucking quotes thing, and this is a soup of the same quotes over and over again. There's one quotes thing that just says, Batman drives his Batmobile. Batman shoots his harpoon. Joker, he missed! Batman flips the truck over. That's not a quote!
That is not...
I don't have time for this. I haven't even eaten dinner yet, so... I'm so sorry. That sounds like a horrible website. Rotten Tomatoes, so do better. All right.
That is not a quote.
It's not a quote.
So that just about wraps this up. Thanks for listening to the Common Geeking Program. I'm your host, Laura Kramer, and you can find me on our Facebook page at the Common Geeking Program. Again, I have been joined by...
I'm Colin Ketchin, and you can find me at Sonic Colin K on lots of platforms.
Hey, it's cool. Me, King Kodish, and you know, you can find me out in the hobble, you know. living someplace dank, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of living off small birds and grats, you know, that kind of stuff.
But will we have gross Foley sounds when you crunch into them?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, so juicy sweet.
Cool. Nice. All right. Next week, our episode is going to be hosted by... I actually have no idea who's hosting the next one.
It's me. It's the news.
Oh, we're doing the news next? Oh, shit.
Yes. I believe so. That's the only one I know I'm doing next. All right, just making sure. I was like really worried. I was like, oh, shit.
No, yeah, that's, that is the common briefing program.
Yeah, and I will bring you the common briefing program. We'll be bringing you up to date. Well, up to, and by up to date, I mean like 2 weeks behind.
If you guys record it closer, I'm editing it. Like, record it the week of. I'll get it done.
Yeah, of the news and gaming and geeking culture. We're still figuring out exactly what we'll be talking about. Because it's the news as it develops live 2 weeks before, afterwards. So it's like, I don't know, it's like the host. They died 2 weeks ago, but you're learning about it now. Just like season one of Westworld. Bam, season one of Westworld.
This episode needs to end right now.
It does.
By the way, did you guys know there's a second season of Westworld?
There is. Okay, so we're gonna... So make sure you tune in to that common briefing program next Friday on September 14th. And follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Common Geeking Program. Any engagement such as sharing a post, tagging us, or tweeting #CGP will enter you into a raffle where you, yes you, get to pick a topic for a future episode. Reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is a critical help in growing our show, and we'll read new reviews on air. I got real excited and got to read one last time I was on an episode, and it was super awesome. So we're gonna do a little checky check.
I looked at it. I think we got another rating, but we did not another get rating. Whoa, we have whoa. There are two more ratings since the last time I looked. Let me see if anybody wrote anything. I don't know if they did. I don't see any I don't see any new things written, but we did get two more 5-star ratings.
Yay!
That brings us up to 5. Something.
We super
now
appreciate
have
it.
3 5-star ratings.
I don't know. I don't know why I'm looking at this now, because I believe you, but also maybe I guess I don't.
And you see it with my own eyes.
Colin just proved to you that you're on a podcast full of people ready to believe in good.
That's not a quote. I'll say it.
But yeah, we really like to read the reviews online, so or on the podcast, and we love to see new ratings. So even if you just want to rate us and not leave a review, I respect that too. Thank you.
Rate my pod.
So much for listening, subscribing, sharing, and everything that you do. We will talk to you next week.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Laura Kramer, joined by the representatives Colin Ketchin and Keenan Kodish. This episode is sponsored by getting someone else to edit the latter half of this episode because the editor has not finished the second season of Westworld yet. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Jeff, as well as Colin Ketchin, and also featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. Next week is going to be another special Common Briefing Program episode about the latest news in geek and nerd culture, so be sure to tune in for that on the 14th of September. And as always, thank you for listening to this.
So Colin, you'll be very proud of me. I finally figured out what that little like slide on the top of an iPod is. It's just freeze the screen. I did not know that before. I'm so tech savvy now. I'm practically a genius. I could work at Apple.
I think you could. Why don't you come take my shifts for a bit?
Sure, definitely. I'll just... Are they okay with long commutes? Like, I don't know, you know. If you spot me for gas.
Yeah, because the gas is going to be a bigger issue than the several days.
Well, it's plain gas, so just, you know.
Plain gas? Yeah.
Which doesn't sound as intelligent as jet fuel. For some reason. And, can I get some plain gas over here? See, that makes you sound like an idiot. Jet fuel sounds right.
Yeah, it doesn't sound wrong, it sounds dumb.
Yeah, it sounds
like a very big difference between those two things.
Plain gas can't melt steel beams. See, if that had been the slogan, everyone would have been like, alright, this guy's clearly an idiot. And there would be no conspiracy theories.
Amazing.
the importance of language, you know?
I was talking to a friend recently who didn't know about the 9/11 truther thing.
Oh, I was really worried you were going to say didn't know about 9/11. I'd be like, oh, that's going to be rough. It's a rough conversation.
All right, when are we clapping? Should we wait till 9 minutes and 11 seconds?